October 21st. I'm Dave Rabin. We're joined by our wonderful membership coordinator for WPFW, Sataria Joyner. Welcome. And on our show today, we're going to speak with Lawrence Ware, Interim Director of Africana Studies at Oklahoma State University. He's written a compelling article entitled Five Ways Black Parents Must Step Up and Teach Their Kids Our History. Get ready for an interesting interview, folks. But first, as you might have noticed if you listen to our beloved station, we are in fundraising mode and we need your support. We offer you, I think, a unique product. You don't have to listen to any commercials. We are commercial-free radio. We're the first in at least this country, if not the world, to have a listener-sponsored radio back in 1949. And you don't have to put up with, I mean, when I put on regular commercial radio, it's just, it's appalling how much advertising you have to deal with. But you don't have to deal with that with WPFW, but you do need to deal with our coming to you every couple of months and ask for your support. What do you think, Sataria?
Well, one thing I think is that WPFW is a worthy investment for our listeners. We strive to not only bring news and information, but also entertainment through our music programming. If you support public media and free, independent, corporate-free media source, if you appreciate David Raven for his wonderful program he brings you each and every Tuesday as a volunteer, we ask that you make your donation. Our goal for the hour is $600. We know we can make that. Someone out there loves the show and has the ability to donate that $600, but we recognize that everyone cannot do that. So we ask that you become a sustainer. You can do so for as little as $10 a month. Give us a call, 202-588-9739, or donate now at WPFWFM.org. Cash App us, $WPFWFM. But however you choose to support WPFW, please do so.
Yep, and you can go to WPFWFM.org. We take credit card, we take debit cards. We got a PayPal option on our website. We also do Cash App, $WPFW. Please, folks, step up. We know these are difficult times, but we want to keep this community resource, this wonderful station for jazz and justice, WPFW. We want to keep it on the air. Please show the love. As Sataria said, sustainers are great. You know, just say how much you can give every month, and if you find that you can't do it, we can, you know, take you off the list. But we love sustainers. We love new members. So please show the love, and let's get on with our. I think you're going to find it a very compelling interview, and on with the show. Lawrence Ware, Interim Director of Africana Studies at Oklahoma State University, has written a compelling article entitled Five Ways Black Parents Must Step Up and Teach Their Kids Our History. The piece appearing in the online publication The Root asserts that, quote, Black parents, if you want your history taught right, you must do it yourself. End quote. And Professor Lawrence Ware joins us now. Welcome to Community Watch and Comment. It's great to have you.
Thank you for having me.
Really appreciate it. So talk a bit about why you think Black parents need to step up and teach Black history to their kids. Just can't trust the schools?
Well, I'm coming at this from Oklahoma. So at the time when I wrote the article, we had a state superintendent whose name was Ryan Walters. And Ryan Walters has gotten some notoriety recently. But nonetheless, he was very much involved in pushing back against teaching Black history in the way that I thought that it should be taught. He wanted to teach Black history in a way that it valorized America and minimized the ugliness that surrounds Black people's experience here in this country. And then beyond that, going to the presidency, we've seen that the president has tried to do things to minimize how vicious and ugly the experience of Black people were in this country, with things like, so I wrote an article many months ago, gosh, he's been president just a year, goodness gracious, not even a year yet. Anyway, I remember back in the day when he first kind of got into office and he tried to do away with the Tuskegee Airmen, then he got some pushback and then they were kind of reinstated. But then he started taking aim at different institutions. He wanted to kind of not necessarily rebuild the Confederacy, but put back up statues to the Confederacy. And then he started taking aim at things like the African-American, you know, Smithsonian is what I like to call it, the Black Smithsonian. And right. what we see is a concerted effort to try to tell the story of America in such a way where it does not tell the truth, honestly, of what Black people have experienced. And so I saw this happening and I said, look, you can't trust educators to do this for you. You can't trust, many teachers are good teachers. They want to tell the truth, but there are powers above them that do not want them to tell the truth. And so I kind of came to the conclusion that you can't trust them, right? You cannot trust these institutions, these teachers, white or Black, whatever. You just can't trust them. And so I then said, well, then parents, who's going to teach our kids their history? I said, parents, you guys got to do it. And so I made the argument that parents need to teach their kids Black history, you know, the real Black history, the honest Black history, the one that says, yes, America is a good country. Because, you know, my grandfather fought in World War II. He loved America, but he also, when he came back, never stood for the national anthem ever again. Because he had a really bad experience of coming back after World War II and being treated like a second-class citizen. So there is this dichotomy between us loving America and simultaneously being very frustrated with America. And so I think that it's important for Black parents to teach their kids the history. And I didn't want to just say, hey, teach the kids the history, good luck. But I tried to give them some things that I thought that kids would be interested in, that would be engaging to kids, and give them a little bit of a heads up of these are the things that you can use to kind of get that discussion started.
Yeah, and you don't pick easy topics. I mean, we're going to talk a bit about Nat Turner and the Black Panther Party. These are challenging topics. I mean, you don't take the easy way out and just talk about the civil rights movement. You know, in the 50s and 60s.
Of course not, because everybody knows the civil rights movement. Like, now, I did drop eyes on the prize, which does deal with the civil rights movement, but everybody knows the civil rights movement. Like, every single Martin Luther King Jr. Day, we get somebody doing I Have a Dream, you know, like, we know the civil rights movement. We know that it happened. We kind of know the stakes. What people are confused about are the fact that slaves were not docile and they fought back, right? What people don't know about are the Black Panthers, right? They don't know those things. And so, yeah, I do nod to the civil rights movement, but everybody knows the civil rights movement. Like, that is ubiquitous in our culture. I wanted to kind of point out things that are a little bit more challenging and might give students something that they don't know about.
Right, right. Let's talk about Nat Turner. A graphic history by Kyle Baker, and I just want to say it was great. I read a couple of graphic histories because of preparing for this interview, and it was really an interesting time. These are page turners, I think you can say, that for the kids. Yeah. And the book by Kyle Baker, I don't think this is in the Confessions of Nat Turner, can't imagine it is, but Kyle Baker starts with the abduction of Blacks from Africa. If you could talk, and the middle passage, I mean, it's right. It's very powerful stuff.
Well, you know, I think that this is actually a book that I actually use in one of my classes. I teach a class at Oklahoma State University on MLK, Malcolm X, and all that kind of stuff. And instead of like jumping into MLK and Malcolm X, I like to start with this book because it provides some context. Because in order to understand Malcolm X, MLK, the civil rights movement, you got to go back and you got to understand slavery and you got to understand how slavery started You have to understand what slavery was all about, why it was so vicious, to kind of get to the point where you can start talking about the civil rights movement. And so I think this is a good place to start. One of the things I like about this is that it has minimal words. It's very much a visual graphic novel. And like, so for example, I had a hand in writing a graphic novel about Paul Robeson, and that's a very wordy graphic novel, a lot of words, all that kind of stuff. I wanted to provide something that was very picturesque, a lot of pictures, because slavery, like, we know that slavery happened. We know it was bad, but it's very useful to see pictures to kind of reinforce what that was all about. And also, this does start really before Nat Turner to kind of provide the context. It starts with the triangle trade and all the kind of stuff, the really, really bad stuff. But it does a good job of simultaneously saying, okay, this is what slavery was about. This is what slavery was, but all slaves were not docile. And it simultaneously, and I'm also a minister, it simultaneously does a good job of saying these people who fought back against slavery, and sometimes in very vicious ways, and I don't know about the viciousness, I'm a little bit more of a pacifist, I'm a Kingian kind of guy, but they felt that God was pushing them to do this. And I thought that this one story kind of encapsulate all those things. It brings all those things together. It brings together the role of religion. It brings together the history of slavery. It brings together the idea that slaves are not docile. Like, you know, what you saw in Gone with the Wind, that's not necessarily how things were, right? That it was very, very much a vicious institution, and an institution that people were not sitting down for, just kind of going along with. And I think that this is something that students need to know. They need to know that, particularly Black students, your ancestors were not docile. Your ancestors were not sitting around and going along with slavery and okay with the institution that they found themselves in. They were finding ways to fight back against it. Even while they were in the midst of despair and darkness, they were fighting back. And I think that Black students need to know that, because I don't know if you know this, but I talked to a lot of students today. They feel very despondent. They feel very upset about what's happening in the world, and they need to know historically and contemporaneously, I should probably say, so I'm messing up my words. They need to know that you can fight back. And even if you don't know that you're going to win, you should fight back. I think this story does a good job of kind of making that case.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me about the Warsaw Ghetto uprising by Jews.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's kind of analogous, I think. And it's important, you know, to remember that, because there's this sense of there's just 6 million Jews in the gas chambers and taking it sort of in a docile manner. So Turner is very, very, Nat Turner is very religious. Apparently had, you know, visions, and
he did. But
part of the problem in telling the story and the uprising that happened, what, in 1831 in Virginia, is that he didn't just kill slave owners or the guys cracking the whips in the fields.
It's complicated.
He killed men, women, and children.
He went after all of them. You know, I think that for him, he saw that the institution touched all those individuals. And in touching all those individuals, he kind of just went at it. And what I think that it does, this particular book, and I do this in my class, is it provides for you an opportunity to ask questions, because he does things that are unethical, I would argue. But he's coming out of an ethical place. So it provides an opportunity to have discussions and say, okay, is this guy a madman? Did he go too far? Are all these people guilty of the institution? And so it provides an opportunity for parents to go back and forth with their kids and say, okay, let's talk about what's happened here. Let's talk about this. This is a real thing that happened. What do you guys think about this? How do you feel about how he went about things? And it provides an opportunity, because it's not just teaching them the history, but getting them to engage the history and have thoughts about the history. And you know, because I'm a philosopher by trade. And so for me, it's all about engaging in ideas, stimulating ideas, getting them to come up with their own ideas about things, and not just necessarily these are the dates and this is what happened, but how do you think about these kind of things? What do you think they did? Do you think they were ethical in what things they did? And so this book provides an opportunity to kind of do all those things.
Yeah. Do you have any idea if Nat Turner was inspired in part. I know he was, part of his rebellion is that he could read and write, which was illegal, right? Slaves mm-hmm. are not supposed to do that, but he figured it out. I mean, it's kind of extraordinary. Do you know, and he was very, as we've been saying, inspired by the Bible. Do you know if he particularly was inspired by the book of Joshua? I think it's the sixth book in the Old Testament, you know, where the Jews are coming, ironically, out of slavery, and they go back to Canaan, and it's rape and pillage and total right. slaughter of every, no people, no animals left in Jericho. I mean, we're raised, Joshua won the Battle of Jericho, and it's all positive, mm-hmm. but it's really quite awful.
Right. It's kind of hard to know what he was actually inspired by, because we just don't have that much from him to tell us exactly what inspired him. But I do imagine that he was a voracious reader of the Bible. I am almost certain that he came across those scriptures. And so it stands to, I suspect that he was, but I cannot say, you know, with all certainty that he was, but I suspect that he probably was. But I just can't say for certain that he was.
Yeah. We're going to take a little fundraising break, and we'll be right back with you, I should say, and speaking with Lawrence Ware, Interim Director of Africana Studies at Oklahoma State University. Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back with you. And we're here doing a little fundraising. I need to come to you every couple of months and ask for the do-re-mi, because we are, as we've been saying, an alternative model. We don't inundate you with commercials, but we do need your support, and we're listener-sponsored. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention that that the Capital Area Food Bank is offering, from now until the government reopens, for federal workers who are furloughed or even possibly laid off, there's free food distributions for you folks. And I'm not going to read out all the different sites, but check out, go to the website for Capital Area Food Bank, an extraordinary program. They offer fresh produce, shelf-stable pantry items while supplies last. So do check them out. Their phone number is 202-644-9801, or you can go to their website for Capital Area Food Bank. For those federal workers, there are a lot of you out there, I know, that are in need of food. It's a scary time, and our hearts go out to you, and do check out this extraordinary offer from Capital Area Food Bank. So what do you think, Sitaria? It's an interesting program, huh?
Most definitely. Thank you for bringing this to us. I've enjoyed listening. I know your listeners out there have been hearing the interview and really into the information that's being given. You know, at WPFW, you get a free education 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. If you appreciate this, if you appreciate hearing these interviews, if you appreciate the effort and the time that they put in each and every week to bring you this information and bring you wonderful interviews and information about what's going on in our communities, please show your support and make your donation at 202-588-9739 or click donate now on our website at WPFWFM.org. You can always Cash App us, and Cash App is $WPFWFM. We still have $600 to go to meet our goal today. We know we can make it. Oh, we did. We got someone.
Oh, wonderful.
Yes, Pamela in Annandale says, keep on fighting for justice. Keep on bringing the truth to light. Well, that's what we're working on, Pamela, each and every day on WPFW. And I know that is something near and dear to David's heart.
And we're going to get back to our show, On With The Show. Back with you. I'm speaking with Lawrence Ware, Interim Director of Africana Studies at Oklahoma State University. Let's talk about the Black Panthers. Another, you know, complicated. It's not easy. This is not easy stuff. It's a complicated, involved, and fascinating story, and the graphic history that you suggested is The Black Panther Party by David Walker, and it's quite a read. Why don't we just, for folks that might not be familiar with it, let's talk about the founding of the party by Bobby Seale and Huey Newton, if you could touch on that.
Well, Bobby Seale and Huey Newton, I mean, the Black Panther Party was just kind of an organization that was started off with relatively humble beginnings, and they were just trying to, push back against some of the things that they saw that was happening there in Oakland, California. And they kind of came together and they kind of formed this organization, and they were, I mean, let's just say what they were. They were radical. They were radical individuals. One of the famous things that they did, the Black Panther Party, or infamous perhaps, is they went on to the California legislature grounds with armed weapons, right? And they argued that, no, they didn't open fire. I don't want people to get mad and think I'm saying this. That's not what they did. But they went on to the California legislature grounds with armed weapons. And they argued that, we have the right to own weapons. We have the right to carry weapons. And the laws are written in such a way that it allows us and affords us to do these kinds of things. And that's the kind of things that they were doing. They were very provocative. They were very provocative in the things that they said, the clothes that they wore. They were very much inspired by Marxist and Lenin kind of philosophies. And they kind of started as a relatively ragtag small group. But they built out from there. They gained some traction. They were very attractive to people, and it kind of exploded from there.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fascinating, fascinating story. And they bring in Bobby Seale and Huey Newton, eventually bring in Eldridge Cleaver, who's a controversial guy. What is he? Ends up fleeing the country.
He is all over the place. I mean, so Cleaver was originally in jail, and he wrote a really kind of provocative book while he was in jail, and he got involved with the Black Panther Party, and he was very much very radical, very left leaning, really pushing the envelope to such a degree that he fled the country. But what's weird about Cleaver, what's weird about this guy is that later on he becomes a Republican, and he becomes very much in the pocket of Ronald Reagan and a born again Christian, which, there's nothing wrong with being a Christian, but it's just that he just makes this complete left turn later on in life. He's a very strange guy, if I'm being honest. Yeah. Very, very strange, unique individual.
Yep, yep. And they come up with, I think Huey Newton is primarily responsible for the 10-point program. I found it so interesting. I mean, going back to the Jewish tale, he says, well, if, Germany can pay reparations to Jews because of the Holocaust, we're talking 6 million slaughtered black people, it's like more like 50 million people. Mm-hmm. I thought it was is an argument I hadn't heard before. I thought it was rather compelling.
Well, the 10-point program is the famous program that the Black Panther Party put forward. It's just, we want freedom. We want power to determine the destiny of our black and oppressed communities. We want full employment for our people. It's a manifesto that argues these are the things that we are trying to accomplish. These are the things, our demands, if you will, these are the things that we want. And it provides really a very systemic and also very thought through articulation of their platform. It's important to understand that Huey P. Newton, very complicated guy. The end of his life is rather dubious. But he is a person who is very much a student of political history, of political science. And so he's very much engaged in trying to make the Black Panther Party a very legitimate kind of party that people take seriously, that people just don't think, oh, they're radicals and we're not going to take them seriously. But they try to have things that are kind of very much ground up, dealing with the issues that people are concerned with. And part of that was their free breakfast program, that they wanted to have this breakfast program that really has been emulated all across the country today, really, where young kids, they understood that kids who go to school who haven't had breakfast, they don't do as well. And they want Black kids to do well. And so they create this breakfast program there where kids can come in, get breakfast, you know, and get a good start to their day, because they are concerned about the poverty that Black kids are being reared in. They're concerned about the test scores that Black kids have. And so they're trying to find very concrete ways to kind of combat that. And so this is what, you know, Huey P. Newton and Bobby Seale were all about. They were trying to find concrete ways to address the issues they saw happening in the Black community. And these are just kind of the 10-point program, the breakfast program. These are just ways in which they tried to implement these things.
Yeah, I mean, you hear about Black Panthers, you know, carrying around not just weapons, they're carrying around rifles when they go into the Sacramento State House. They're carrying rifles, which we should point out was not illegal.
No, it was not legal. No, I mean, they were following. Now, they definitely changed the laws after that happened, but it was not illegal at the time. And so they knew that. Now, and honestly, in today's day of people going viral, doing these kind of stunts to go viral or whatever, they were essentially going viral in the 1970s. They knew that people would find them provocative for dressing the way that they do, for carrying the rifles the way that they did. And so they were marketing geniuses in their own way. Spreading the message of what they were, because they knew that if people were to find them provocative and interesting, people might also kind of dig into what they're about. And so they were kind of innovative that way. And they didn't break the laws, right? Of course, they changed the law quickly thereafter, but they didn't break the law, but they knew that it would be something provocative that people would start talking and thinking about if they did something like that.
Yeah, I think their approach to getting attention, when it's called guerrilla PR now, I think that's what it's called. How can we get attention here? And they sure got it with that march into the California legislature. Just one of the other points I thought was interesting from the 10-point program is Blacks should be exempted from military service, It's so tragic that that wasn't implemented because, a disproportionate number of Black men were killed in the Vietnam War. I mean, it's tragic that they weren't able to pull that off.
Well, you know, and that's exactly what, I was going to make that point, but you just made it for me. You know, this is happening in the midst of the Vietnam War. This is happening at a time where a lot of Black folks who fought in World War II came back and were treated as second-class citizens, as I said about my grandfather. And so they were aware of that. And they're not a pacifist organization at all. It's very important to understand that they're not pacifists. They're carrying around guns, and they are willing, you know, to engage militarily if acted upon, as did happen every here and there. So, you know, they never shot first, but you shoot at them, they would shoot back at you. But the thing is, they felt as though Black people had been exploited by the military, that they were forced to go off and fight in the military. And because of that exploitation, they made the case, unsuccessfully, but they made the case that Black folks should be exempted from that, because so many Black people were involved in building the country and were not giving any credit for the building of the country. And then many Black folks fought for the country and then were not, you know, rewarded. You know, there's the Black folks who fought in World War II. There's the Black folks who fought in World War I. There's the Black folks who fought in the Korean War. Many of these individuals, they went off and they fought, they came back, and they were treated like second-class citizens. You know, America did not revere them for the things that they did. And then many Black folks went off and fought in the Vietnam War, came back, were not treated very well. So they see these patterns and they're like, look, Black folks should be exempted. Now, of course, Black people were not exempted from military service, but that was the case that they were trying to make.
Yep. So Huey Newton is jailed for what, 2 or 3 years? I can't remember which. I think it was a killing of a police officer, I believe. But then as he gets out of jail, there's kind of a split in the party. I hadn't realized that Huey Newton became a little bit less concerned about arming herself and confronting the police. And it's all about the free breakfast program. And they were starting mm-hmm. schools, liberation mm-hmm. schools. If you right. could just touch on that split.
Well, it's just many organizations. I mean, this happened with the SCLC. This happened with many organizations that are like this. You know, you have a group of individuals, they come together and they originally see things the same way. But as time goes on, people's ideas begin to change. People change naturally. And so there begins to be a little bit of a split where Huey P. And the backdrop of this also is that Huey P. Newton, yes, his focus was changing, but Huey P. Newton started to, oh man, I'm trying to be gentle here because my father was a member of the Black Panther Party and I don't want him to be mad at me, but Huey P. Newton started to have mental health issues. He started to be very volatile. His personality started to change. And in his personality changing, things begin to kind of change with the Black Panther Party. Some people wanted to go in different directions. Some people wanted to stay in line with what he was doing. And so there was just this natural rift that kind of happened later in the party. Bobby Seale kind of starts doing things a little bit more political. He eventually runs to become the mayor, I believe that is, of Oakland, right? So things just change. And the rift was not necessarily a amicable rift, because Huey P. Newton was very much abusive in some areas, in some ways. And so the changes that began to happen, Huey P. Newton, yes, he began to kind of change, kind of focus more on these liberation schools and focus on the free breakfast program. But he's also engaged in not savory behavior. And that kind of pushed some people out of the out of his concentric circle. They still wanted to kind of engage in the Black Panther kind of ideals, but he began to kind of push some people out. So as I said, it's not a pretty end to the story, but it is a story that I think that is worth telling. And I think it's important for young black kids. Now, this is probably something you probably don't want to talk to your kids until like, you know, middle school, you know, somewhere about that age. Like, you don't want to say, hey, 6-year-old, let's sit down and talk about the Black Panther Party. But, you know, ultimately right. what you want to do is you want to kind of let them know that there was this party and that there has been this kind of concerted effort for many years. And I think the Black Lives Matter movement kind of changed this a little bit, but there was this concerted effort for many years to kind of vilify the Black Panther Party for self-defense. And it's important to let them know, let kids know that this was a party, that they were legitimate. Yes, there were some ups and downs. Yes, there were some disagreements, but it's important for people to know their history. And I think that part of knowing your history is knowing the beautiful parts, but also knowing the warts. And there is a lot of beauty here with the artwork, with the organizing, with the things that they were trying to accomplish. But there are some warts and there are some things that went awry. And I think it's important to kind of let people know that both these things were there to take it seriously.
Yeah. Yeah. And as of what the book came out in 2020, and at that point, there were still a dozen Black Panthers, former Black Panthers in jail. Mm-hmm. And we've got, you know, we certainly still have police brutality. And, to be sure. You know, it's what the arc of history bends towards justice, but
it takes a long time to get there.
And you take two steps forward and take a step back. And that's, we're going to talk about various issues in play right now. I want to hear your perspective on that. I should say, I'm speaking with Professor Lawrence Ware, Interim Director of Africana Studies at Oklahoma State University. We're going to take a little fundraising break and be right back with you. And we're here with you, joined by Sotaria Joyner. We don't have any time for this break. As you might have noticed, this is a pre-recorded interview. We're running out of time. I want you to hear all of the interview with the wonderful Lawrence Ware of Oklahoma State University. So what do you think, Sotaria?
Well, you know, I want to thank Pamela again and Annandale. Pamela not only went online to donate at WPFWFM.org, Pamela also became a sustainer, and you can too. Again, our goal for this hour is $600. For as little as $30 a month, that would add up to a contribution of $360 for the year. That is a huge contribution at WPFW, and it makes a big difference. Every bit makes a big difference at WPFW because you, the listener, you're the sponsor, not some big corporation. We don't program for them. We program for you in our community. So please consider making your donation at 202-588-9739 or WPFWFM.org. We do have Cash App available. You can Cash App us at $WPFWFM. We're looking forward to thanking you and hearing from you. Join the WPFW family.
Thank you, Sitaria. And on with the show. And we're back with you, I should say, and speaking with Lawrence Ware, Interim Director of Africana Studies at Oklahoma State University. And you've got, let's touch on the other three suggestions that you have for Black parents in terms of teaching Black history to their kids. If you could talk about, we mentioned Eyes on the Prize. It's a several episode documentary that I think aired at some point on PBS. I imagine you can get
it. Yeah, it was in the 80s. Yeah, it came out originally in the 80s. There was like a two-part one because the first part was about like the civil rights movement proper, and the second part kind of started talking about the Nation of Islam and kind of expanded out. But that first part is the one that everybody kind of remembers. And that first part came out in the 80s. It aired on PBS. It's kind of a hallmark. In all of my classes that I teach, I watch at least one episode. Now, either I watch Awakenings, which kind of tells the story of the beginning of the civil rights movement, and or I show them the episode that is about the Selma March, I think that is. So those are the two things that kind of zero in on. But really, you kind of can't go wrong with that series. I think that if you wanted to watch that, you would probably need to go to PBS and find the episodes there. I don't think they're streaming anywhere. But yeah, that's just kind of a hallmark. That's a go-to. And that kind of goes back to the civil rights movement. So I'm not as enthusiastic about that one. I kind of included that because you kind of got to talk about the civil rights movement. But everybody kind of knows it. So, you know, show it if you want to. The other things I would say are very much, you got to show them kids the other stuff.
Yeah. And then you mentioned, I'm probably mispronouncing, is it Ava DuVernay's documentary 13?
13th, Ava DuVernay.
Which I didn't get a chance to look at yet. I certainly intend to. If you could talk about that, it sounds very compelling.
Well, 13th is a documentary. It came out a few years ago. I forgot exactly how many years ago. I've shown this to students there at Oklahoma State University for many, many years. It is a documentary that zeroes in on the 13th Amendment. And what the 13th Amendment does is it frees the slaves, but it says that people who are imprisoned can be treated as though they are slaves. It's kind of there in the Constitution. And so what she does is she uses the 13th Amendment to examine the rates of incarceration for Black folks and the way that Black people, Black men in particular, but Black people writ large, have been incarcerated at increasingly high, at alarmingly high rates. And she uses the 13th Amendment to kind of go through that. It's streaming right there on Netflix. She then kind of ties, I'm not sure she's that successful on this point, but she tries to tie the Black Lives Matter in movement into this there at the end. I don't know if she's that successful on that point, but she does a really good job of making a compelling case that the 13th Amendment sets the stage for the really high rates of incarceration for Black people. Now, that those incarceration rates have kind of gone down a little bit since the movie was kind of released, but the incarceration rates are still extremely high, disproportionately high for Black folks than they are for other individuals. And so this is something I think kids just need to be aware of. They need to watch, need to be kind of wrestling with.
Yeah. And you can see a lot of these documentaries and feature films on Canopy. I don't know if you're
aware. I didn't know that 13th was on there, but yeah,
Canopy. I'm not sure that it is, but it's a wonderful resource.
It absolutely is.
It's got the documentary on James Baldwin. I'm not a Negro. And
yeah, I'm not a Negro.
It's Canopy with a K, and it's free. It's a rather extraordinary.
I think all you need is just like a membership to a library or something
that's
to
it.
Get access
that's
to it. Canopy. So yeah, that's a wonderful resource.
Yep. And the last item that you mentioned, and we're running out of time, but can't talk a lot about it, but the feature movie, The Hate U Give, if you could just touch on that, and it's got a interface with the Black Panthers that
it does.
You see at the very beginning of the movie, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, and I think that the little girl is forced to kind of learn, I always say forced, she's encouraged to learn the 10-point program of the Black Panther Party. Yeah, The Hate U Give, it started off as a book, it's a really, really good book, but I went for the movie, I think, because it's a little bit more accessible, you can sit down and watch it. But The Hate U Give does a really good job of tying together the Black Panther Party, the Black Lives Matter movement, it ties all those things together. It's a very compelling story. It's fun, but it's also very educational. I just cannot, you know, recommend that highly enough. I think that it's a wonderful thing for kids to watch because it's an easy way to inform them of the Black Panthers, but also bring their struggles in conversation with what kids are dealing with today. So I love that book and movie very much so.
Yeah. And when people have gone through your suggestions, your five suggestions, which you can see on the online publication, The Root. You've got other articles up there that they can access and other good people contributing opinion pieces and such. It's an interesting read. Where should people go for additional resources when they've gone through these five items?
Oh, man. I mean, that's a hard question.
That's a heavy question.
I mean, email me. No, don't email me. Honestly, I would say that this is a good starting point, but there's a lot of other good resources. You know, there has been a concerted effort to really write things that tell the story of Black history to kids. A lot of wonderful books that are out there. So I would just say go to your library. Look at the books that are out there. There's a lot of graphic novels. As I said, I helped to edit a graphic novel about Paul Robeson that's kind of geared towards teens. There's just a lot of wonderful resources out there. So I would encourage you to look at those kinds of things. You know, there's a lot of really good documentaries. I Am Your Negro. I'm Not Your Negro, rather, but about James Baldwin. That's a good one. There is also a book Between the World and Me, Tennessee Coates, that's a good one. And then there is the book Revolution in Our Time, The Black Panthers Party Promised to People, that won a National Book Award. Well, it was a finalist for the National Book Award. That's something that I would recommend. There's a lot of good resources out there. So just get started. Start with those resources. And then from there, just kind of organically start doing some research into what Black history things you can kind of express to your kids. And I think you'll be surprised by the wealth of information that's right there on the internet.
We're running out of time. I do want to hear your thoughts about the turmoil going on in this country right now. It's a stress test, I think we could say, for democracy.
Definitely.
With many expressions of and of outrageous behavior. Your thoughts, sir.
It is a crazy time to, we are living in an insane world right now is what it is. And it is very difficult sometimes to stay sane in this insane world. Right now, we have the Supreme Court looking at the Voting Rights Act. I have a strong suspicion that they could gut it. We'll see. It seems like Justice Barrett is on board. I'm really concerned about Roberts. It looks like Kavanaugh wants to do away with it. Then we have Trump doing all the things that he's doing with the government shutdown and firing people or threatening to fire people. It's a turbulent time. But one of the things that I would really let people know is that as far as Black folks are concerned, we have been through difficult times in this country before, from slavery, civil rights movement, that, you know, Reagan and the Reaganomics. We've been through a lot of stuff. And so just because things are bad now does not mean that things will always stay bad. And so there is room for hope. But ultimately, it is so important that we engage the democratic process, that we push back, that we protest, that we vote, that we make our voices heard, and not just be quiet and go along with the things that are happening. I thought that the No Kings protest was very encouraging. It's just important that we, you know, Democrats don't have the power right now, but that doesn't mean that we as people cannot exercise our power with our voices. And so it's important for us to kind of push back where we can, do what we can, and not just take this sitting down.
Yep. going back to that Supreme Court case, I guess the hearing on it was last week, and it looks like they very well might eviscerate what remains of the Voting Rights Act, which was, I guess, over about a dozen years ago. Was it Shelby? A very serious a dent in the Civil Rights in the Voting Rights Act. And I don't know the number I heard. Do you know how many people of color were representatives in the House of Representatives before the Voting Rights Act?
Oh, I don't know exactly. I mean, I could tell you it wasn't very many. It couldn't be more than a handful.
It was like something like six. And currently there are people of color over 130. Yeah.
So the Voting Rights Act kind of paved the way for that. Yeah.
And it was the voting right. I mean, sometimes Lyndon Johnson gets labeled as a racist. I mean, we could use more racist like that. I mean, the Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act, this is serious stuff. And he's turning over in his grave with what's happening with that case. I guess we'll get the ruling will come out at the end of the year, I believe.
I don't know. Something normally like those kind of things come out like in June or something like that. I don't know exactly when we're going to get the ruling, but I'm very much on pins and needles because we know that I'm not going to say we know, but I'm pretty confident that conservative justices are going to go one way, right? Except for Barrett. Barrett seems to be in the middle. What I'm really going to zero in on is Roberts. Roberts will be the one that will be probably the deciding vote. We're just not sure how he's going to vote, but we definitely need to keep an eye on this because I do not trust America to do right by black folks when it comes to voting. There's just way too much of a history of them not doing right. So them being forced to do right is why things are better. You take that away, I don't know what this country will look like over the next few years. So we'll see.
Right. And of course, we've got a expanding wealth gap in this country. It's off the charts. I mean, it's worse than the robber baron age of the turn of the last century. I mean, if you could talk about that, because I think particularly for African Americans, it's an egregious problem and need to be addressed. And it's certainly we're going in a different direction right now.
You know, when I first started writing about politics way back in 2016 or so, it was when Bernie Sanders was running for president. And I was quite critical of Bernie Sanders because he really focused on class and didn't say as much as I would like about race. But because it's important to understand that race and class kind of work in tandem when it comes to black folks to make things very, very, very bad for us. And so what we're seeing now is so much worse than it was back then. It has gotten so much worse. And what we have is just as you said, just unimaginable levels of inequality, economic inequality are there. And it is so much worse for black folks because of that interchange between race and class that's happening there. And so we are just in a dire state. Like, things are really, really bad with us. Things are very bad when it comes to economics. They're bad when it comes to race. Things are just really, really out of control. And my hope is that things will get better once we get this guy who's in office out of office, or maybe next year there will be this radical change where Democrats will kind of be put back into some kind of control of one of these levers of power. But with the Voting Rights Act, they're trying to do away with the possibility for that to happen. It's just things are really bad right now. And it's very important for us to, number one, be knowledgeable about the history. That's the reason why I kind of advocate for us to understand the history, understand how we got there, because we will not be able to kind of effectively fight against it if we don't understand the history of it. But simultaneously, we have to be very aware of what's going on, because things are bad and they will only get worse if we don't push back against them. We don't understand how we got into these kinds of dire straits, these really bad kind of situations.
Any recommendations for what people should do to be engaged? I guess, you know, Saturday with the No Kings, arguably one expression. Right. Any other ideas for what people can do that are concerned about the unfolding problems in our country?
I mean, I don't want to get too radical here, but I think that touching base with people like the Democratic Socialists of America will help you to kind of get engaged in a grassroots kind of way. Move On still remains a very viable, I think, way to kind of get engaged. Now, you have some criticisms on some of the stuff that Move On does, but they will at least, you know, make you aware of what's going on. But I would argue that there is a push to kind of try to make mainstream media not be as responsive to what's going on to the country as it relates to class and race. I'm just going to say Democracy Now, man. Like, Democracy Now is a wonderful resource. You know, just being engaged with that. Radio stations like this one that we're on, that's the reason why you guys should donate to this radio station, because these are the last remaining kind of places where you can kind of get this information out there, right? You can't rely upon CNN or even MSNBC. You need places and radio stations like this. So donate, 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 guys. You know, we need these kind of places. They need to be viable places where you can get this kind of information. So Democracy Now, places like this, this is where you go.
We should say Democracy Now airs on our station Monday through Friday at 8 a.m., the flagship of Pacifica Radio. And we, unfortunately, are out of time. I've been speaking once. I know.
I had so much fun.
That's good. That's what we wanted. Serious issues, but we're going to have some joy in talking about it. I've been speaking with Lawrence Ware, Interim Director of Africana Studies at Oklahoma State University. Thank you so much for your time, for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Really appreciate it. And certainly hope you enjoyed that interview. I certainly enjoyed doing it. We pre-taped it yesterday. Anyway, we are just about out of time, but we need your support. I know you're hearing this inundation of requests for the Do-Re-Mi, but that's what you give the listener sponsor station. And as we were talking about at the end of that interview, wealth is concentrating in this country like never before, like never before. One of the downsides of that is just as Louis Brandeis said, you can have concentrated wealth in this country or you can have democracy. You can't have both. You got to fight it. And one way to do so is support this wonderful community resource that is independent media, that is Jazz and Justice, WPFW. So any thoughts as we end our show, Sitaria?
Well, just to reiterate that WPFW is free, independent media that has been here since 1977. We plan to be here into 3077 with the help of our listeners like you out there. So give us a call, make your donation. We have $360 to go to meet our goal. You can someone could do $30 a month. Become a sustainer at $30 level. That'll get us there. Two people giving $15 a month, three giving 10, you know, however it is you choose to donate, six people giving $60. But make your donation to WPFW, because WPFW is important to you, because you are important to us. 202-588-9739. Or donate now at WPFWFM.org. Don't forget Cash App, $WPFWFM.
Wonderful. Thanks, Sitaria. And that's going to do it for our show. Thanks to Sitaria and our wonderful engineer, the amazing Mike Masella, for his pulling us through. It's not easy with a pre-taped interview, and he pulled it off beautifully. Thank you, Mike. And we've got some important notices for you coming up. And then don't forget the blues for the extraordinary Lady Murr at noon. And listen to David Whetstone's program tomorrow at 11. And thank you so much for listening. I'm Dave Rabin. Stay safe and have a great week.